Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Welcome to Silmarillion Stories, where the Lorehounds, your guides to Tolkien's world of Middle-earth. I'm John, and this is our podcast for Of the Return of the Noldor Part 1, the 14th portion of the Silmarillion. In this episode, we're going to be discussing the death of Feanor, the rescue of Maedhros, and the suspicions of Thingol. If you want to get in on the Tolkien talk, send an email to lotr@thelorehounds.com or visit our website where we've got a contact form or a voicemail feature. We also have a great Discord server link below, and there is a fun and active community there. There are dedicated Tolkien and Silmarillion channels and channels for all of the other shows we're covering. Speaking of, please stick around to the end of the podcast for programming notes about the rest of our coverage in May, such as House of the Dragon and Doctor Who. One more note. If you want to support us directly, head to patreon.com/thelorehounds or Supercast. For as little as $3 a month, subscribers get ad-free and early access to all of our podcasts. You get Shireside Chats, a podcast where I break down the letters of J.R.R. Tolkien one by one, and plenty of other stuff like the show guide and the show tracker. Plenty of great stuff on there. Okay, so with me today is Caitlin Fascista, the creator of Tea with Tolkien. Caitlin, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me on. This is always fun to talk about Tolkien.
Yeah, so you do quite a lot of work in the Tolkien space, and you're the leader of a pretty large community. I joined your Discord server today, and I was like, wow, there's a lot of people here.
Oh, yeah. It's surprisingly big.
It's awesome. Can you talk a little bit about what you do about Tolkien?
Sure. So I lead a community called Tea with Tolkien, and the primary thing that we do is a book club. So we kind of rotate through Tolkien's works. We just started a Silmarillion book club last week. And so we kind of, what I'll usually do is I'll break the book into like 10 or 12 parts. And then we'll spend like, you know, a couple months working through each book. And we'll have voice chats in our Discord server and text chats that are kind of like going 24/7. And so that's like the main thing that we do. And I always really enjoy that because there are always new people coming in. And so you get that kind of fresh perspective on things.
Right.
That maybe it might be something that I've overlooked because I've read the Silmarillion so many times. So that's super fun. And then we also have a lot of free resources on my website. Probably the best one is our Silmarillion Reader's Guide that I'm really proud of. And we've actually had it translated into German. And I have someone working on translating it into, let me think, Spanish and Turkish and Greek right now. And this is all like volunteer work because the guide is free. And so, you know, it takes a while. But I just think it's really cool that we're making the Silmarillion and kind of Silmarillion resources more available to people around the world. So that's really fun. And then I guess the other thing I do with Tea with Tolkien that's more fun versus like super helpful is I like to kind of post about like hobbit parties that I have a lot. we'll do like recipes or game ideas because my family has a hobbit party every year. And this is our 14th year having one. And so I always love to kind of think of new ideas for that. And so I'll share them on the website too.
That's awesome. And you have a podcast of your own too, right?
Yeah. So I've kind of been moving more towards YouTube because I found that videos are a lot more fun. Mm-hmm. But the podcast does still exist. So it's just called Tea with Tolkien. And the YouTube channel is also called Tea with Tolkien too.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I hope people will go and subscribe to those. I will put them in the show notes.
Awesome.
Really excited to have you here. So I now need to tell you how you helped the Lorehounds come to existence. Because back in our origin story, this was early 2022, the Rings of Power was coming, and I was talking, I don't know if you've heard of the podcast network Bald Move, but they do a lot of Game of Thrones and things like that, and I was on that Discord server and talking with other listeners to that podcast, and some people said, you know, I've never read The Lord of the Rings before, I've been wanting to do it, and I said, all right, well, I've read it, I can sort of lead us through it a little bit, but I needed a resource to break it up for me and make a schedule. And I was just Googling Tolkien reading book club schedule and you came up.
No way.
We used one of your templates for the schedule for that.
That's so cool. Oh my gosh.
And then David, my normal co-host, he ended up reaching out to me and saying, you seem to know a lot about this Tolkien thing. You interested in maybe trying a podcast? And that's how we ended up doing this whole thing. So actually, it's pretty funny that you, your template was part of the origin of this podcast.
That's crazy. Oh my gosh. That's so cool.
So I would recommend the resource. That's good. What I'm gonna tell everybody.
I'm glad.
Also, I did dig a little bit on your Silmarillion guide today. And for our listeners, we do for our patrons these show guides for a lot of shows. Like we just started one for House of the Dragon, and they're very visual and whatnot. This is very similar, and you do a really great job summarizing things and making it digestible. So I would really recommend checking all this out. It's all at teawithtolkien.com, right?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much. That's awesome. I'm glad you like it.
It's great. It's great. Great resource. And you're doing the professor's work out there.
Aw. I hope he would be proud.
I think so. All right. So the Silmarillion, can you give a little background of how you came to the Silmarillion and Tolkien in general?
Yeah. So I think as with most people my age, I was first introduced to Tolkien through the Peter Jackson movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was maybe 11 when they came out. And so I instantly loved the movies. And then as I got older, I, of course, picked up the books. And I couldn't really understand them at first as I was reading, but I just kind of kept going.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, I just completely fell in love with The Lord of the Rings. And I was that nerdy kid at school who was, like, scribbling on my notebook in Elvish because, of course, I had I tried to teach myself Elvish as, like, a 12-year-old. And I gave myself the nickname of Gimli, which, like, looking back, like, all the girls always loved Legolas and Aragorn, but for some reason I was like, yeah, Gimli, he's like the cool guy.
That's my kindred guy.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I don't know, I've just always been a pretty big nerd. Definitely got made fun of a lot in middle school for it, but, you know, I turned out just fine. With the Silmarillion, it's actually a cool story. My best friend from high school gave me my first copy of the Silmarillion as a wedding gift.
Oh, wow.
When I got married. And he wrote this nicest message on the inside cover. And so I still have that copy. And then I brought the book with me. So on our honeymoon, we went to Italy for like, I think it was like 2 weeks long. It was a crazy trip. And I brought the Silmarillion with me. And so we were on a lot of trains, just like going across Italy and stuff. And mm-hmm. So I was reading a lot on the train and I was trying to read through the Silmarillion. And then, of course, you know, a lot of people struggle with their first read and I did. So
yeah,
I definitely got lost. Yeah. But I just kept at it and I tried for a couple years, kept trying. And then, you know, I'd forget about it and then I'd find it again and try again. And eventually I started picking up other Tolkien podcasts and I'm trying to think of which ones they were. I don't remember, but
Prancing Pony helped me through my first read through.
Oh, yeah. I loved The Prancing Pony. And then I also really liked The Tolkien Road.
Never heard.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Their episodes they're pretty long and they're very conversational. It's like a husband and wife team. And
oh, nice.
The husband is the big Tolkien fan. And then his wife hadn't read it before when they first started. And so she asks a lot of good questions that like a first time reader would ask. So it's kind of a good conversation. But yeah, I don't know, as a kid, I just fell in love with Tolkien and then just never stopped reading.
Yeah, I think that's a good origin story for a lot of us. Mm-hmm. A lot of us. I mean, you have a very similar story to me. I didn't get the Silmarillion at my wedding, but you know, I really got into it sort of in adulthood, the Silmarillion. So it's quite the work, and it requires a lot of breaking down, because I don't know for you, but every time I go through it, I feel like it becomes more of a play. Like it becomes more of a play in my head. I can see the character drama more. I can sort of feel for the characters more, because you do have to headcanon a lot of the emotions and a lot of the dialogue and things like that, because really he's just giving you, except some parts, but he's largely giving you, you know, a history text. And so it's really cool to see a chapter like this where it's much more dramatic than the chapters before it.
Yeah, I was rereading this chapter. Actually, I was listening to the audiobook as I was getting ready for this episode, and I was like, oh man, I get to talk about one of the best chapters, because there's so much that goes on in this chapter. So
yeah,
it's just like one thing after another, and it's all crazy.
Yeah, so we had been emailing back and forth, and this was the chapter that we settled on. But then today I had emailed you with an outline, and I said, I don't think we could do this whole chapter in a podcast, or it's going to be like a 2-hour podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do half the chapter this episode.
That works, yeah.
And we're gonna handle the third battle, but not, sorry, the second battle, but not the third battle.
Okay.
All right, so why don't we dive right into the chapter. The Noldor exiles return to Middle-earth. Upon their arrival, they burn the ships of the Teleri to prevent others from following.
This is really a rough moment in the life of Feanor. I mean, like, I feel like he's already kind of exhibited his villainous behavior, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it's at this point where they're like, you know, which ship should we send back to, you know, help everyone over? And mm-hmm. he's just like, none and none. And then I forget what else I can't remember the exact quote, but he's just like, you know, let those who cursed me curse me still, like, I am 100% done with you people. And these ships mm-hmm. that were so special to the Teleri that they were willing to die for the ships, he's like, just burn them. Like,
yep.
Ooh, like he is such a bad guy.
Yeah, he's in his villain era, as the kids
yes.
say. And it's really shutting the door behind him. I guess at that point, he didn't know that Fingolfin was already on his way, and Finarfin.
Right. I think he must have just assumed that they were just going to kind of either turn around or that they would just mm-hmm. die back there. I don't think he realized that they could figure out a different way to get through.
Right. And they do. They do this chapter. So I guess we'll see how that turns out.
Yep.
The burning ships, of course, draw the attention of both Fingolfin and Morgoth's forces. Morgoth's orcs then attack the Noldor in their encampment. The Noldor are victorious, emboldening Feanor to seek out Morgoth.
I love how Feanor has this immediate consequence. Like,
yes.
The second he steps foot in Middle-earth, stuff starts going down. And the fact that it's him, his huge act of cruelty in burning the ships,
mm-hmm.
that's what alerts Morgoth. Like, it's like he rang the front doorbell.
Right.
I love that. Like, Tolkien was a genius for writing it that way.
Yeah, he could have had the element of surprise, but he completely got rid of that. But at the same time, you have this kind of double-edged sword, because Fingolfin does see it and then know where to find the Sons of Feanor.
Right. That's true. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. But I just love it. I feel like it's so poetic.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Tolkien is a big fan of things coming back to bite you.
Yes, especially yep. for poor old Feanor.
Yeah, yeah. There's some great quotes over here about Feanor. And he laughed aloud as he wielded his sword, rejoicing that he had dared the wrath of the Valar and the evils of the road, that he might see the hour of his vengeance. And pretty good character moment. Pretty good portrait of Feanor there.
This is something that makes me wish we had a movie of the Silmarillion, because can you imagine seeing that on screen?
Yeah, like, just like fire behind his eyes.
Yeah, that would just be an incredible moment. I mean, there are so many moments, even in this chapter, that would be incredible.
I would take a movie just of like Alqualon. Well, like the Silmaril stealing of Morgoth through like the fall of Feanor could be the first movie.
Yeah,
you know,
that'd be good. Yeah,
a good arc.
Really, to give the Silmarillion proper treatment, you would need like a 10 season TV show.
Yep. I've always thought, I think it would do well as an animated show, so you mm-hmm. don't have to deal with sort of the otherworldliness of a lot of the elves and things like that. I think you could do that much better in animation.
Yeah, I agree.
Feanor, of course, for he was Fey, consumed by the flame of his own wrath.
Yeah, that's another good one. I love the usage of fire references for Feanor too.
Yeah, and it also goes into that whole Fea and Hroa of elves deal, right? Like their spirits burn up their body energy.
We see pretty soon what happens to Feanor's body.
Right, exactly. So it's almost like he's just burning up like a candle right now. He's like, I'm putting all of my will, all of my Hroa is going away so that I can get rid of Morgoth.
Well, and it's crazy too, because he has kind of been like that even since he was born, because when his mother gave birth to him, like it cost her so much energy and strength. It like so much went out from her when mm-hmm. Feanor was born that she couldn't bear living anymore. So
right.
It shows, like, just even from before his birth, he was really, you could say, like, he was almost destined for something great, and it just ended up being something great and horrible.
Right. Yeah, it's very sad. It's very sad, the whole arc of Feanor. He's a great tragic character. And mm-hmm. Feanor is the one I always think of when people go, well, I like Lord of the Rings, but Game of Thrones has all the nuanced characters. And I'm like, have you read The Silmarillion?
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't give The Silmarillion a fair chance.
Yeah. I mean, even The Lord of the Rings has a lot of character complexity, and I think people are very reductive of it in that way. But The Silmarillion, even more. Like, it just has such complex characters.
Yeah, I would say Feanor, because he's the greatest of the Eldar in arts and lore, Tolkien says. So like, mm-hmm. if you think about how great the other elves were, for Tolkien to say that he was the greatest in both arts and lore, and he created the Silmarils, the Palantiri, mm-hmm. and his own like system of letters, like, this guy is so cool and so special. And so for him to have turned into darkness, it's almost like he's, not to make like a Star Wars comparison, because this won't be perfect, but it's almost like he's like the chosen one or something. There's no prophecy for him, but he had this massive potential, and then he just goes in the complete wrong direction.
He goes full Vader.
Yeah.
Yep. So Feanor, of course, is mortally wounded by Gothmog, Lord of the Balrogs, and taken to safety by his sons. On his deathbed, Feanor reminds his sons of their oath. His body then burns up with the fire of his will.
I think it's another testament to Feanor's intensity and his own sense of pride and self-will that even as he's dying, he doesn't realize, well, maybe this was a bad idea.
Yeah, like, this is what killed me.
Yeah, he's like, well, this better kill you guys too, or else, you know, mm-hmm. like, he doesn't have a moment of clarity before death. Instead, he holds on to this grudge so intensely that he dooms the rest of his family.
And Tolkien keeps hammering that through this chapter, even where, you know, you have the Feanorians and the sons of Fingolfin coming together, and you're like, they can't trust each other. Tolkien says they can't trust each other because of this oath. They just can't bear to turn back, bear to apologize for anything.
Yeah, the oath is serious business with Tolkien. Like, you do not mess around with oaths.
I know. Elrond even says it later. He's like, hey, no oaths. We're not doing that.
Yeah.
there's a great quote here too. The way that the language describing Feanor's death fire is fantastic. Then he died, but he had neither burial nor tomb, for so fiery was his spirit that as it sped, his body fell to ash and was borne away like smoke. And his likeness has never again appeared in Arda, neither has his spirit left the halls of Mandos.
That's another moment where you're just like, man, Tolkien is such a good writer.
Yeah.
Like sometimes it just hits you and you're just like, geez, this guy has the most amazing talent.
Chills. You get chills there. And of course, we have the introduction of the idea that he's just sitting there very grumpy with Mandos all day. Like Mando's just got a roommate that he is never leaving.
Yeah, that would be that's a really funny situation to imagine.
Yeah. It's a sitcom now, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it could be. That could be a full episode in our Silmarillion TV show.
We're already writing it.
That's right.
All right. Morgoth feigns defeat and offers a Silmaril to Maedros. Maedros, in kind, tries to deceive Morgoth and bring a host to the negotiations. But Morgoth brings more and took Maedros prisoner, hanging him from a precipice of Thangorodrim.
I think this situation is really funny because they both are trying to trick each other.
Yes. It's the Spider-Man pointing meme.
Yeah. And like the thing about Morgoth is he's a Vala. Like I just feel like you're not going to outsmart him it's like trying to do that was goofy of them.
But
they're in a tricky situation too. So I don't know if I would have done the same thing too.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because if you didn't have the oath, you could maybe go, he's probably lying. Let's move on. We'll get him at another time. But this oath is keeping them making these mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And Maedros has to accept this offer just to try.
It seems like Morgoth knows about the oath. I'm not sure if we're really told that in the Silmarillion, but it seems like he obviously knows that they are pursuing him for the Silmarils.
Yeah.
So he's kind of using it to taunt them.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just he knew how into the Silmarils Feanor was and that was his, that was his motivation, was to get them back. And so he figured, the Sons are probably into it too. Let's offer it up. Maybe it'll work. Mm-hmm. The Sons of Feanor, again, just like him, just like their father, are really complex characters. And I really enjoy even this chapter, we have Maedros really showing us that for the first time.
Mm-hmm. It's a shame that we don't get more about them because I feel like you could get a really detailed description of their character maybe if Tolkien would have had more time to write it.
Yeah. Well, more than that, along with the bigger descriptions of Galadriel in the First and Second Age.
Mm-hmm. If only.
Yep. The forces of Fingolfin then arrive and make their way through the forces of Morgoth. Upon reuniting with the Feanorians, there's clear tension between the factions.
I mean, yeah, there would be some bad blood between these two groups. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen The Flight of the Conchords. It's a TV show. And there's this moment where one of the characters goes, "You left me for dead." And then the other character goes, "Well, I wouldn't have done it if I would have known you were going to give me a hassle about it," or something like that. And I always picture those two characters in my mind when this situation comes up. It's like, bro, what? Why'd you do that?
Yeah,
like, we're relatives. We're kin. I know you just killed some of our other kinsfolk, but come on.
Yeah, and you get that here. Tolkien says, and they would have welcomed them, but they dared not for shame.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this whole, the deeper you sink into evil, the easier it gets, right? The more you can't be honest with your kin, the more you can't be welcoming, the more you have to continue to be cruel. And it's really hard to watch.
Well, and shame is something really powerful that Tolkien uses, because if you go back to the Ainul Indale, it says that Morgoth felt secret shame.
Right.
He felt shame, and from it came secret anger. And that's kind of what fueled him towards committing even more crimes. And so it's this sense of like, kind of like stirring like ruminating on something that you've done and kind of like holding it and not really being able to get over it, that kind of causes you to feel a lot of guilt and like be unwilling to let things go or move past them.
Right. Yeah. That's definitely a thing. And I once took a class and I've talked about this with Marilyn Arbukila, who's a Tolkien scholar that often comes on up on this pod, but this class on sort of feminism and how it allows us to view violence and how it allows us to view different tracks that we're put on as children. And I know I'm going somewhere with this, I promise.
Okay.
And there was this difference between shame and guilt that was brought into the discussion. And this difference had to do with whether with shame you are angry at others because of how you're being perceived. And with guilt, you're angry at yourself for hurting others.
Oh, that's interesting.
And both can be really, really mentally taxing, and both can be really toxic. But shame with the Noldor is, I think the Feanorians aren't really angry at themselves. They're angry that the sons of Fingolfin got there.
Yeah, they're kind of like, ooh, we thought we wouldn't have any consequences, and right. Now we have to deal with it. Right. I didn't see that coming.
Mm-hmm. Because later they're not remorseful. You look at Caranthir later talking to Engrod. I got to get all my Engs together on this chapter. Engrod. And he's just like, yeah, you know, your mother might not be Noldor, but you better act like one of us anyway. You know, they're all so cocky, except Maedhros. I think Maedhros is the one who had the best chance of redemption.
Well, who is it at the... I get the two mixed up. I guess... Well, I don't want to spoil the ending of the Silmarillion, but I feel like towards the end of the Silmarillion, after a lot of things have happened, there's the two brothers left. Mm-hmm. And I feel like those are two characters that you can really learn a lot from, but yeah. I won't spoil anything.
Yep. I know what you're saying. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that... He among the sons of Feanor, has the most depth in terms of character development.
Yeah, I can see that.
So there's another quote here that, you know, you're saying all these scenes would be great in a movie. But as the host of Fingolfin marched into Mithrim, the sun rose flaming in the west, and Fingolfin unfurled his blue and silver banners and blew his horns, and flowers sprang beneath his marching feet, and the ages of the stars were ended.
And this is even cooler when you realize that this is the sun rising for the first time.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
This isn't just, oh, it was morning time. It's like, before this, there was no sunrise. So yeah, that's another really cool moment. You can imagine like the whole scene being dark and then just the sun coming. And of course, Morgoth is confounded by the sun. He's just like, what even is this, you know?
Yep. And then, of course, he's pretty good at blotting out the sun near his house.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, he probably had to figure that out, though. I mean, I'm sure there was a period of time where he was like, oh, boy, I don't know what to do at all about this, because it says that he was confounded by it.
Mm-hmm. And he's a Vala, and yet he's having a hard time. So I guess he can be outwitted.
Yeah, by the sun. Yeah,
by the sun. All right. Fingon, the son of Fingolfin, climbed Thangorodrim alone to save his old friend Maedhros. He finds him through the power of song and tries to rescue him. Seeing no hope, Maedhros asks Fingon to slay him. Fingon pleads for help from Manwë. Just in time, Manwë sends Thorondor, king of eagles, to carry them to safety.
This is such a, like, an intense scene where he's like in this hopeless situation, and he's just like, you know what, if you can't help me, just kill me and put me out of my misery. And then it's as he's about to go through with it that there's this moment of divine intervention where the eagle comes. And then after that, they can't even really get him down through that way either. So he's, once again, he's just like, oh, just kill me. And he's like, no, dude, mm-hmm. I'll just cut your hand off and then we'll be good. And so then all is fixed. But yeah, it's really beautiful. And it's like so heroic. It's yeah, really valiant. Yeah. And it shows his character really well.
Fingon is so cool. I wish he were in Rings of Power.
Oh, man. I don't think he appears in the appendices, so that's probably why.
Well, neither do like a lot of these characters, so it's fine.
Yeah.
So this section is so Greek to me. You know,
yes.
It's Orpheus and Eurydice with the playing of I think it's a harp, right, that Fingon is playing. But he's playing something, and he's singing just to find Maedhros through this whole maze of Morgoth. And that's awesome.
I swear that as a kid, I saw this very story in a cartoon, like a mythology cartoon. But I could not tell you the name of it. It's just like a weird memory from my childhood of...
Was it The Storyteller? It's not a cartoon, but you know what I'm talking about?
I'm pretty sure it was a cartoon, but maybe... Because the first time I read this in the Silmarillion, I was like, wait, I've like seen this before.
Yeah.
But it's like something I probably watched at my grandma's house that I would have no idea what it was. But like, I don't know, there's something so familiar about this whole scenario. So it must be drawn from some mythology that I can't quite place.
Well, there's another Greek component to this, which is Prometheus being punished for, you know, giving the humans fire. And he's tied to a rock, and an eagle comes every day to eat his liver.
Yeah, maybe I saw like a cartoon of Prometheus as a kid.
Maybe.
Like, who's showing their kids these cartoons? But maybe my grandparents were.
Yeah, but I think it's kind of interesting there that the eagle is sent to torment Prometheus, but mm-hmm. here the eagle saves Fingon and Maedhros.
Yeah, whenever an eagle shows up in Tolkien, that's a very good sign.
But why couldn't they bring them to Mord? I'm just kidding.
Don't get started.
I'm not doing it. I think what I took most out of this section, though, other than the Greek mythology, was that Fingon asks for help and shows humility, which is something that the Feanorians never do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I can't get out of this. Manwë, please help.
They just have so much pride, and anyone with humility is so... different, like mm-hmm. incredibly different from them. When you get a character who's being humble and asking for help, it's like, whoa, it makes them look like the best guy ever.
Right. And you know, this is a running joke that I have on this podcast, is the case against Manwë and his leadership.
Yeah.
But here I'm kind of like, maybe he would have helped this whole time if somebody would have just asked.
Yeah, I guess that, yeah. Or maybe he saw like Fingon was pure of heart or something like mm-hmm. that, you know, and he was like, okay, I like this guy.
Yeah. I think, you know, I know you do a lot of Catholic work with Tolkien. I'm wondering if this is something that I've heard in a lot of Christian theology of, you know, God will help those who help themselves, right?
Yeah. I don't think that's actually in the Bible though. I think that's like
just a saying. Yeah.
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 Yeah, I think it's like maybe more like God helps those who ask, kind of. There mm-hmm. are a lot of different like stories in scripture about, you know, an old widow who just keeps asking and asking and asking, type of thing. And then finally her request is granted. And it's kind of like I can almost see it like the Valar are like, yeah, dude, just ask and I'll help mm-hmm. you out. Yeah. Maybe it might be kind of inspired by that.
Yeah. You know, I think that there is something to Fingon really putting his life on the line and doing as much as he possibly can and then being like, I don't have the power to do this. Please help.
Yeah. And that's really something you see if we get all the way to the Lord of the Rings too, like where mm-hmm. you see Frodo he does everything to get himself to Mordor. And even though in the end he physically himself can't just destroy the ring, it's like kind of providence or fate kind of just swoops in and kind of does the last bit. Like,
we love providence.
Yes.
In Tolkien.
Absolutely.
Fingon, as you've alluded to, has to cut off Maedhros' hand to free him from Morgoth's device. Maedhros apologizes for the abandonment of the House of Fingolfin and offers the kingship of the Noldor to Fingolfin, an unpopular decision amongst his brothers.
Yes, when he comes back, they're like, wait, you did what?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, because had he died there, I don't recall if Maedhros has children, but if he doesn't, then it goes to the next oldest son of Feanor.
I think Curufin is the only one who has kids, but okay. I could be mistaken.
Write in. You can write in at lotr@thelorehounds.com. Yeah, so I think, you know, he kind of passed over his brothers to give the kingship to Fingolfin. And I think that was the right decision. I think that worked out a lot better for the Noldor and created a much more stability than had the Noldor been led by someone who was crazily going after the Silmarils. But it certainly did add some tension between these already tense relations.
Absolutely. I feel like he did this entire kind of operation in order to try to create peace between the two groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it did go a long way, but then it kind of also upset the other sons of Feanor along the process.
Right. Well, a good compromise makes everyone upset, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So last point here, the Noldor set a watch on Angband and keep Morgoth contained. Thingol remains suspicious and only allows the House of Finarfin to enter Doriath. There, Angrod acts as messenger and relays the Noldor the wishes of Thingol, who grants them the uninhabited lands in Beleriand. The Noldor, of course, scoff at being told what to do, and Angrod leaves angrily.
I think this whole situation is very interesting because Thingol is acting really prudently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he gets kind of a bad vibe from the Feanorians, but he doesn't really quite know why he doesn't like them.
Yep.
In the end, he's justified in not liking them, but he still doesn't really know why. And this whole thing is fun. I love how the sons of Feanor are so like irritated at the response to. They're just, once again, they're all so prideful.
Yeah, they are. And like I said, like, I don't think that there was a ton of introspection following Fingolfin coming over here and his son saving one of the sons of Feanor. Just Caranthir really just does not know how to read the room. Like, go back to your non-Noldo mother.
Well, it's even like after you just saw your dad Feanor get killed by Balrogs. Like,
yeah,
that's a horrible death. Wouldn't you be like, maybe I need to rethink my life. And then, you know, you just didn't.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see the different approaches of the different sons of Feanor. Like, I think people like Maedhros kind of sadly go forward with the oath. They're like, all right, well, I'm stuck doing this, but I'm going to try to be nice to everyone while doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you see somebody like Caranthir, who's just so, so bitter about it all. And so vengeful and so cruel.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad to see.
Yeah. Well, any other thoughts on this chapter before we head out of here?
I love this chapter. I mean, it's cool because you've got the sun rising for the first time. You've got Fingolfin and his people arriving in Middle Earth. You've got Feanor dying, which is like a really intense, sad moment.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, I was really glad that we got to talk about this chapter. I think it's kind of setting the stage for what's to come after this.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised we got through it this quickly, honestly. I thought this was going to take much longer, and I probably would have just outlined the rest of the chapter. But
oh, yeah. I'm not very good at banter, you know.
Whenever
that's good. I do a podcast, it just goes quickly.
No, it's cool. I like being pithy, you know?
You know, we got to just pithy. Get through it. With the Silmarillion, it's a long journey, so you just got to keep marching ahead.
Yep. All right, so bullet points of what you need to know from this chapter. If you're just here and you're like, I can't keep up with all these fings and fongs and whatever else is here. The Noldor got to Beleriand. Feanor dies. Let's start there. Feanor dies. Maedhros is captured. Maedhros is saved by Fingon. And the kingship goes to the House of Fingolfin. Those are the main points. I think if you just get that out of this, you're all set.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's a good summary.
All right. So thank you again, Caitlin. Again, where can people find you one more time?
For sure. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me on. This was really fun. Anyone can find me at teawithtolkien.com, or I'm also on Twitter and Instagram at teawithtolkien.
Perfect. Well, thanks again. I hope you can come back again soon. This was a lot of fun. And I'll see you there.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks.
So that was a great conversation with Caitlin from Tea with Tolkien. Please, again, check out the show notes for links to all of her information, all of her resources that she's created on Tolkien. For the Lore Hounds, we've got plenty of stuff coming. We have House of the Dragon Season 1 coverage happening ahead of Season 2. We have a season pass for that where you can just sign up for $10 flat, get permanent access to our ad-free and early podcasts, as well as the show guide. We've also got Doctor Who starting up this weekend, and that's going to be a great time. Me and Alicia are going to be covering that. We have Star Wars The Bad Batch and Tales of the Empire, which is going to be me, Alicia, and Marilyn. So a lot of great stuff coming down the pipeline. And don't forget to keep an eye on the feed for The Acolyte in June, which will also be on our affiliate. It's kind of weird that she's our affiliate and that now she's one of the Lorehounds. But Alicia has two affiliate feeds. One of them is the Star Wars canon timeline. And she is going through Star Wars from beginning to end, the whole timeline story in order. And she is starting off with the Old Republic and then the High Republic. And then I'm going to be joining her for coverage of The Acolyte. So it's going right into that. So check the show notes for that. Also, Rings and Rituals going strong with discussions of all the episodes of The Rings of Power for all your Tolkien fandoms. Wool Shift Dust with Alicia is doing Beacon 23 Season 2. And she's got a lot of other great stuff coming down the pipeline for that. We've also got a new episode out on the Radioactive Ramblings podcast where Aaron and Chase are discussing Invincible Season 2, Episodes 1 through 4, which I've heard great things about this show and this podcast, so hope that they are having a great time with that. Properly Howard Movie Review is, of course, going strong with an episode on Pulp Fiction this week. Next week, they're going to be re-releasing their Dune 2 review, and that will be a great conversation that will lead back into the Felonies and Fugazis series that they're doing the following week. All right. If you want to support us directly, you can, of course, head to patreon.com/thelorehounds, or you can go to the show notes and click on the Supercast link. Supercast is a little better than Patreon for us, and it's also pretty good for you. I mean, it's got a lot more things geared towards podcasters. You'll get a special feed set up in your podcast app, and there's more options on things like the season pass. All right, so our lore masters, or top-tier Patreon and Supercast subscribers, get a shout-out every episode, as well as our Discord server boosters. So I'm going to start with the server boosters, and those are Opus and the Machine, Gnarls, Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, and Doof71. Our lore masters, of course, are Samartian, Michael G., Michelle E., David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Peter OH, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Doof71, Brian8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Eric F., Matthew M., Sarah M., DJ Miwa, Andra B., Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T., Alex V., Aaron T., Sub-Zero, Aaron K., Dally V21, Mothership61, Gnarls, and Adrian. Thank you all for your support. Thank you to all our patrons and Supercast subscribers. And thank you to all of you for listening. Don't forget to come back next month. We're going to be talking about the second part of this chapter, which has the next battle, because Morgoth just can't get enough of war. So we'll see you then. Until then, may Tolkien be with you. The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.